Because by the time that Pheasant comes out, yeah, he's going to be like 70-ish. And will he still be working on games then? Like, I don't see
70?
That.
70? Really?
He's like 60. He's already 60-something, I think.
Wow.
Mm.
He looks good for his age.
I think so.
Hello and welcome to the Press Start Podcast, Press Start Australia's weekly video game discussion podcast. I'm your host, Ewan, joined today by my fellow gamers and co-hosts, Brody.
Hello.
And James.
Hello.
On the show this week, we're going to be discussing More Trouble for PlayStation's live service strategy, some of the latest out of Hideo Kojima's Kojima Productions, a little bit of a tease from Neil Druckmann over at Naughty Dog as well, and what Nintendo's plans are looking like for the rest of the year. But first, James, I want to come your way because you've reviewed a game that I'm particularly interested in. It is Onimusha 2 Samurai's Destiny, the remaster of the 2002 original. What did you score the remaster of this new game for starters?
I settled on 8.5, which I think is quite high. Looking around, I try not to look, but I was interested in this one. 8.5. I gave the first remaster a 7.5. It's good. It's a PS2 game, right? Like, it's there are little things. I mean, I feel like if you enjoyed the first Onimusha, you'll be able to enjoy this. Like mechanically, like, it's not like any older or anything like that feeling, if that makes sense. It's interesting because these games were actually made together. They made one, they started one, and then they're like, this is going to be so good, let's just start two as well with another team. So, like, they all came out.
That's why
it was. Like, when you finish the first game, the trailer for the second game was on the disc. Like, it's like something that would never happen now.
But in the future.
Yeah. So,
I see you can buy them in, like, a bundle as well. I was having a look in the eShop as well, because I was tempted to get this.
Yeah, the first one's, like, very Resident Evil-y. This is more like I would say it's a little more linear adventure with, like, a big cast of side characters, and they're all quite cool, too. The story is very simple. Like, it's a PS2 game at the end of the day, right? But, it is, I really enjoyed it. It's my favorite one of the old games. I wasn't sure going back to it if it was just nostalgia talking or not, but I'm pretty confident now, having played it, like, with my older brain, it is definitely my favorite. So I think it's definitely worth a shot. I'm still keen to see which elements of these games translate into the new one, because obviously that already looks quite different. Yeah, so that's got more of a goofier tone, which this game also does, so I think maybe that's what they're going to be going for. But yeah, I really like it. I mean, I am admittedly like a slut for Capcom, but like they definitely have some misses, and there's a lot of Onimusha misses, like, in my opinion, coming up if they go to remaster the other games. So I think it's nice to play this and be like, yes, it is still good.
Primary difference in score, is that just you preferring this game more to the first, or is there anything they did differently with this remaster in particular, or is it?
On both levels, yeah, like, there is, like, the remaster is better. I don't know if they had access to the original files or something, but, like, because this is a pre-rendered game, right, where it's like a picture and you're, like, running across it, basically, like the old Resident Evils, they don't always upscale the best, but this is, like, super crispy. Like, I don't know if they just had, like, the OG files, or there's upscaling tech is better now or whatever, but this is probably one of the best-looking remasters from a game of that era that I've seen. But on the other side of things, I think, like, it's double the length. Like, the first game, I kind of forgot how short the first game was, and it's just got a little bit more to it. Like, there's these, like, kind of gift-giving mechanics where it kind of changes the way that the story flows depending on which companions are more friendly with you and stuff. And that's just there's just, like, a few little extra layers there that make it a little bit more interesting than just Resident Evil, but in the past. Do you know what I mean? Like, it just feels a little bit more complete as an experience. So, yeah, like, I obviously really enjoyed it. I still think it's great. Definitely worth the shot.
I think you answered the kind of key question I had, which was, as someone that enjoyed Onimusha Warlords, like, was I going to be able to connect to this one? Sounds very much so.
I think you will. I just think, like, it's a lot It's a lot less serious. Like the
The
characters.
I'm curious about, because I made the comment when we saw the trailer of Way of the Swords. I was like, "What is going on here? This feels very tonally different to the game I just played." And you did point out that like it's not the same character, which I totally missed. So yeah, I am curious to see how the tone does kind of take shape in this game, because I just felt like Warlords was pretty straight laced. Like there was
It's very like one to one. Yeah. I'm interested to see what you think, because like I've a nostalgia for it, admittedly, but as somebody who's like completely fresh and still enjoyed the first game, like even though it is such an old game, like I think I'm keen to see what you think of the way that it all works. But it is.
I reckon I might save it for my Switch 2 and play it on there.
Very dynamic.
Yeah. Need something to play other than Mario Kart. Well, yeah, I just feel like Mario Kart will tie me over for some part, but it'd be nice to have something else on there.
It's cool that it's on everything as well. I really like that. I think we talked about this a few episodes ago.
Yeah.
Like Capcom putting all this shit everywhere. I think that is the best way to go for stuff like this. Especially like franchises you want to bring back. You want everyone to kind of be up with the past.
Yeah.
So.
Is it everywhere, or is it just like current gen consoles, Switch, PC? They didn't put it out on PS4 and
No, Xbox it's on everything.
1 year. It's on. Okay, cool.
Yeah. All right, like virtually everything. Well, everything current.
Fridges.
Yeah.
Everything.
Not on Wii U.
Pleased to hear that. Then I'm surprised we started the episode with you admitting that you're a slut for Capcom, but there we are. Let's change topics now, though, and talk about Bethesda revealing Doom the Dark Ages being the biggest in the franchise's history, the biggest launch in the franchise's history, and the biggest launch in id Software's history. It reached the milestone 7 times faster than its predecessor, Doom Eternal 2, which is, pretty impressive. Brody, does the success of the game surprise you in any way? Particularly this level of success?
Yeah, look, I guess not. Like, I mean, I think it's a pretty quality game. Granted, I've only played the first third of the game still. I've played it twice. I played the first third, like, on Steam when we had code, and it's out on Xbox, so I've started again. It seems like it's reviewed well. Like, the critics love it. Like, obviously, there's a lot of talk about, you know, apparently it being perceived as a flop on Steam because it only has like 30,000 concurrents or something like that, but like evidently, like maybe that's where maybe they're not getting it through Steam. Like I don't know if it's available elsewhere, like if it's on
Game Pass.
Yeah, well that's right, PC Game Pass might be bigger than what people maybe give it credit for. And yeah, obviously there'll be a sizable audience on console anyway, so no, I can't say I'm surprised. Like 7 times faster is pretty crazy though, considering I think Eternal obviously sold pretty well in the start, so it'd be interesting to see if it has a good legs to it though, because I mean I think I noted in that article in particular, like we didn't really hear about Doom Eternal after that. Like they sort of said, yeah, we've sold 3 million in the first, you know, week or few months or whatever it is, and then we heard nothing past that. So, you know, hopefully this is not the first milestone and the only milestone that we hear about for this game.
I do feel like Doom Eternal continued to sell well, like well after launch. I feel like I constantly saw people picking it up, and but no, that's purely like an anecdotal sort of feeling, I guess. But yeah, I'm pleased to see the game do so well. I can't say it surprises me just how well it's done. I did expect it to perform better just given that it feels like a lot more accessible, and I think the premise as well is like quite cool, like the whole little medieval sort of angle to it. So yeah, I can see people being tempted to pick it up just as a result of that. What were you going to say, James?
I don't want to be like a downer here, but I do think it's hard to compare these two games, right? Because I feel like the way that everything is announced now, it's like players, it's not people who own it, obviously, right?
Yeah.
Like the rise of subscription services has definitely like changed that a lot, but it's also because I think we go back to the Steam numbers. Eternal came out like at the height of COVID, like same with Animal Crossing, right? They were like the same week, I think. So like a lot of people, I think, were naturally inside playing games. So I think that that's naturally going to be higher in terms of units sold. But then like I do wonder, like I don't think this will have the legs that Eternal has, even though like I would argue Eternal didn't have legs. But yeah, like the yes, the players, it's really, really good numbers for them, but I just think like it's because you're not asking for the $100 or whatever to get people in straight away, right? Like, I think that's a big change.
Yeah.
Like you, I mean, you said it yourself, it's more accessible, right? So that does make sense that more people would play it. But then I think if you were to look at units sold, I don't think it would be as strong, personally.
Yeah, I guess it's kind of hard to, like, understand, really, like, how they define success as far as Game Pass
I just
goes.
Think, like, I look at, like, Clair Obscur as an example, and they were pretty upfront, yeah. And they announced, like, this is how many we've sold, and that doesn't even include our subs and stuff, and I feel like that's like, a way more...
That's a bigger kind
that's
of,
a
like,
better, more transparent way, I feel like, to announce your numbers. Like, I feel like that whatever million players is quite obfuscated on purpose. Mm. But I'm not like saying it's bad. Like, I like the game. I think it should do well. I think it's great that we've got three modern Doom games that are all different. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't surprise me it's done more numbers than Dark Ages. But like, I think it's such a different market now for all the other people who are saying it's like Doom and Gloom for Doom.
Yeah. As much as I did enjoy Doom and Dark Ages, I still have that itch to go back and play Doom Eternal now. Like, I kind of just want to play more Doom games. Granted, we're kind of Doom the Dark Ages is a multi-platform release. It's not strictly kind of an Xbox release. This kind of has been like touted as being part of Xbox's kind of pretty stacked first half of the year. How do you think it's turned out? I think that's kind of about it, right? For, like, the major releases we sort of had in mind from Xbox in the first half of this year.
I think they've done well enough, right? Like, they've got people subbed to Game Pass and people paying money for it on PS5 and PC.
I think it's turned out even better than I thought it was going to. Like, I was very much on the fence about how Clair Obscur was going to shake out to be. And obviously that's blown everyone away. I think maybe South of Midnight wasn't quite the sort of heavy hitter that we hoped it would be, but I think Game Pass has really benefited from the likes of, like, Blueprints being on there, obviously another kind of contender for Game of the Year already, and, like, something like Atomfall as well coming out too, which has enjoyed quite a bit of success as well. I think it's been a very impressive first half of the year for Xbox.
And that's
would you agree, Brody?
Yeah, also that's only... like factoring in, I guess, the games that you can play on Xbox too. Like, I think where they've seen the most success is porting their games to PlayStation at the minute. Like, I think I read something or heard something this week that like 5 of the top 7 games charting on PlayStation at the minute are Microsoft published games. So, and then they've obviously got more coming in that sense. Like, how Hellblade was announced like 2 days ago, and obviously they've got Gears of War Reloaded coming as well. So. I mean, as long as they can keep putting those games that have sort of run their course on Xbox out on other platforms and getting that second wind and second lot of sales, and they'll just continue to do well. So maybe the hardware war is over, obviously, but they're still definitely trying to put out some games, so I appreciate that.
Yeah, pleased for them. It certainly looks like the year's shaping up well, although it does look a bit quiet towards the back end, but never mind that for now. Maybe June, Summer Game Fest, that'll all change. Changing direction now, though, let's talk about PlayStation. News emerged this week that Jade Raymond has left Haven Studios, the studio that she founded back in 2021, that's since been working on Fair Games, an upcoming PlayStation Live service title. Brody, back to you. What do you think the reason for her departure might be?
Yeah, look, I don't know. They didn't obviously give much of a reason. Maybe she's got a phobia of seeing a game, through to full development, which I don't think she's really...
She's had a rough go of it.
Yeah, like, I don't know. Yeah, she's had a turbulent decade in the industry, I would say that. But, there's some word that obviously the game may have had, like, external or, like, internal even testing, and maybe it wasn't received quite so well.
It sounded like there had been a test just some weeks ago that didn't go down well internally.
Yeah, so I mean, it could be related to that. Could just be that her job is done and she's maybe going to move on to something else. I don't know. But yeah, either way, you'd say it's probably not the best sign, objectively looking at it, for the game. It probably doesn't give a lot of promise that Fair Games is going to be anything but fair shit.
Oh wow, how long have you been sitting on that one for?
I thought of it about 2 minutes ago.
He's already sitting on the tagline for the review.
I'm not going to waste my time on that, I'm afraid.
We don't know where, like, we don't know where she's gone, do we?
No.
That's right, she'll probably start another company now and, you know.
I just think, like, yeah, like, obviously...
Has she put out her own statement on it? I don't think I've even seen that. I think there was, like, a statement from PlayStation, right? And Bungie, but that was it.
At this point.
I don't think she has.
Because, I mean, she left... What did she do? She left Ubisoft.
It was,
She founded
it was like
EA Motive.
Stadia.
She founded EA Motive, I think.
And then she left Stadia.
And now she's left for this, and then no fruit has
I don't blame...
Born.
Like, Stadia, like...
She went to the bag, fair enough.
I was like get your bag, sis. Like, I get that. But at the same time, like, I think she worked on Battlefront 2, which, like, I still think didn't get a fair enough... like shake that it should have got, but it must be tough. Like I but then I don't know. I also think like abandoning like ship after the first play. I mean, I don't know. We don't know if this is what's happened, but it's like, hey, okay, guys, the product shit. I'm out. Like
I don't think it would be the.
I'm sure like, it's
jumping
but,
ship at the first opportunity. Yeah.
I hope not. But
I mean, like she's not in the creative side of things, is she? She's more production.
Well, she was like, had a pretty creative role on like the first three Assassins, I think. She definitely took a back seat publicly after the first Assassins because people were gross. But
I do want to have hands on. She has been like four fair games, or whether she's been more like, I guess, a masthead and a face for the studio.
I mean, she built Motive. Like, I know that she might not have shipped many products with them, but I think like she had like a good history of building a studio up.
Yeah.
So, like, and obviously she did that with Haven, but obviously the games just haven't delivered yet. It's very, like, I feel a lot like it's Amy Hennig all over. Like, she just keeps jumping from project to project and just never hitting in many ways.
You feel it's such a disaster for pretty much any of these live service games at the minute. Like, even, like, the one that you would have thought would have some hope of succeeding, like Marathon, that's just going from like blow to blow at the minute. Like, they're catching L's all over the place.
So, yeah, I was going to make mention of that. It's not been a good week for them either. Obviously, in Hot Water, having it merge that the developer had plagiarized art assets from an artist, all with it, had their permission and involvement, obviously. It's pretty rough spot for PlayStation's live service strategy at the moment. It hasn't really kind of looked any hasn't shown any signs of improving since Concord fell over, for sure.
It's definitely unfortunate.
My heart goes out to the devs of projects like these. Like, I just don't think it can be fun, like, to be working on stuff like this when it feels like everyone is against them.
I still hold out hope there's the potential for like a good game to come out of this. Like, I think, you know, Marathon's obviously in a bit of a tricky spot at this now, but that was kind of, and it sounds as if it was really just one person at the studio that's gone rogue and obviously not done the right thing. That Bungie's acknowledged has since left the studio.
I feel like that's a cop out too.
There might be a smoke screen of sorts.
Isn't this like the fourth time that something like this has happened at Bungie? So it's like,
yeah,
maybe that was one person too, and they'd already left. So
all these mysterious one person
can't be traced back to anything. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, they've left. They're not here anymore.
It's just such a shame with Marathon because like so much of its identity is built around how it looks.
It was the only thing I thought was cool about it. That's not to say I think it's like important to be like it, that. It's not like that's it's they've that art style isn't like just that game, right?
Yes,
like
correct.
I feel like that is it's not completely unique, but some of that stuff is like one to one lifted from other people's shit. So
all the same, like I have hope that that game turns out well, just given kind of Bungie's pedigree. It like reminds me a lot of like Apex Legends, kind of looking at it too, which is a game I really love. So the things like that kind of work. I'm hoping work in its favor. But fair games we were always kind of on the fence with, didn't really see it kind of panning out. And I worry it's, particularly if it is indeed an internal test that hasn't lived up to expectations. I think PlayStation would be far more inclined to pull the plug at an earlier stage now, rather than go down the same route that Concord did. So maybe doesn't bode well for the game.
Yeah.
Or maybe they'd change strategy, and it's not like it's a free-to-play thing. It's not like a paid $40, $60 release or anything like that. Yeah, maybe that's doable too. I don't know. Let's talk about one of PlayStation's other studios now, though. That being, which one did I want to talk about first? Hideo Kojima, who hinted that it might be another 5 to 6 years before we see his espionage action game Pheasant, suggesting he might take up a film directing role until then, that kind of being the key clue. James, what do you think this means for OD?
Got to come out first, before Pheasant.
I think, if anything, that's just... I think people are more interested in Pheasant because of what it is, right? Like, it's like...
Like a spiritual successor to Metal Gear.
Yeah, like, I feel like that is always going to get a little bit more attention than OD.
Would you say that people will be interested in what it isn't rather than what it isn't?
Just coming out with all the wordplay today.
Yeah. He's got, I can just imagine this little shitty notepad filled with all of these sentences. Yeah.
Literally.
Yeah, so what was the question? I don't think that means anything. I think it's just people are talking about Pheasant because of what it is, and it's a little bit further away. Like, I think when I was there, there was a lot of talk about like what they're working on, and OD was mentioned a lot as well. Do you know what I mean? But there was no timelines given for any of these projects, but they were always talking about OD and Pheasant together. Like, I just think this is something people have picked up on. And I think OD is maybe closer than we think.
It's worth noting, that the news about that Pheasant, you know, release window, that came while he was talking about the Death Stranding film adaptation, but it was also on a Death Stranding 2 junket. So it's probably not likely he'd be talking about an Xbox-published project during that kind of thing. Yeah,
fair.
Talking
about directorial roles, like Pheasant is meant to be quite like an like interactive experience, right? More so than like talked about it in other ways other than game.
Yeah, and it's a transmedia sort of thing, like more than one thing. But like I would say once Death Stranding's out this year, I would say that it'd be full steam on OD, and I'd say that's probably likely a next year sort of thing if I had to guess.
Really? Mm.
I think so.
I think so too.
Like, no reason why not. I mean, we've seen leaks and demos of it years ago. So, I mean, it must be in some sort of state at this point. So, might even show up at SGF next month. Who knows?
Maybe. Or maybe there's like a big reveal at Game Awards at the end of the year or something.
I can see December. Keely. Like, it being shown in December.
He wouldn't want to shit in his own mouth for June, would he? So.
Oh, true. I forget that June is also now a Keely thing. Yeah, I kind of like see OD maybe being a couple of years away and then Pheasant being kind of the 4 years after that. But yeah, I guess they have been talking about OD for a while. So maybe that has progressed like quite far in terms of whilst they.
It's like kind of nuts to think like OD and Pheasant could be his last two games. Because by the time that Pheasant comes out, he's going to be like 70-ish. And will he still be working on games then? Like, I don't see
70?
That.
70? Really?
He's like 60. He's already 60-something, I think.
Wow.
Mm.
He looks good for his age.
I think so. Yep. Not to glaze him too much, but yeah, he's doing well.
Yeah. I love how, because that interview that he gave when he talked about taking up film directing, he was like, it's something he wants to do while he's still young. And so maybe that's just clouded my perception.
I think he just spent in his 50s. Right, like, I understand. Yeah.
Not doing a Clint Eastwood or a Scorsese and like directing well into 80s, 90s. He'll be, fair enough.
Just for a recap, he'll be 62 in August.
Mm.
So.
Okay. All right. Okay. Fair enough. Sticking with movies a moment longer, did you see the news today that Alex Garland might be is directing the A24 Elden Ring movie?
That's exciting. I like Alex Garland.
Yeah, me too. I'm pretty excited about that. It's an odd fit, I think.
Yeah, like A24, Elden Ring, and Alex Garland. Like, I would never put those three things together. Although I feel like, you know, I don't know if any of you guys follow movies. I mean, you do, but you know what I mean. I feel like Neon is taking a lot of A24's bag when it comes to a lot of these movies. So I think they need to, like, get something back.
But they might want to kind of do things a bit different. I guess, like, we think of a very particular type of film with A24, but maybe they're branching out a little bit as well.
Mm.
Cool. Speaking of PlayStation, first party studios. Sorry, not first party studios. Affiliate studios. Neil Druckmann peeled back the curtain on Naughty Dog, confirming an unannounced game is still in development at the studio, with Druckmann providing creative oversight on both the unannounced game and the in development Intergalactic The Heretic Prophet. So a bit of a mystery title in development alongside Intergalactic The Heretic Prophet. Brody, do you think it's The Last of Us Part 3 or a new IP? And do you have a preference either way?
I don't think it's The Last of Us Part 3, but I think it could be like a Lost Legacy type game in The Last of Us universe, possibly.
Oh.
Maybe. Because I would imagine Druckmann would want to be very much more involved than just, say, like, creatively overseeing. Like, I feel like he'd want to be, like, really entrenched in, like, the last game in that series. I would think, but, you know, I'm not him.
I think he would be. I think he's underselling his involvement to a degree. Yeah, if this is part three, I reckon he's probably written the game, or, like, written the story of the game, but he's not, like, the director kind of on a day-to-day.
They do.
I reckon he's kind of, like...
They've got so many guys, or guys and girls there, that could, I guess, helm a game, like, and they have done that, so... Yeah, you may have a point there.
I sort of feel like they're going to be under a lot of... I was going to say a lot of pressure to make part three. I think they themselves will want to make part three, too. Also to keep up
with the show now, I think.
Well, yeah, I think that's a factor. My suspicion around the show is that they'll finish part two in season three, and then we'll kind of get, like, maybe a spin-off Last of Us series that kind of explores other parts of the world.
I don't know.
To kind of, like...
I don't know, because I think Craig Mazin has said that they may need another two seasons for the rest of the second game. So,
which is nonsense.
Well,
I don't buy into that at all.
You never know. Because they could do some of that fleshing out that you're talking about in, say, the California stuff.
Yeah.
Like, they could make that almost a season.
I think it'd be a stretch.
The conflict with Ellie and Dina, like Abby obviously being taken by the Raiders and stuff, like... That could almost be a season. Flesh that out a little bit with some other side characters that are new. Anyway, James is about to fall asleep, so we may as well.
Maybe it depends what exactly happens in season three and where they leave season one. Like, we're obviously still to see that finale for
season two. I think we'll definitely finish at the theater.
My theory is that they keep talking about Ish and, like, in all the making of and podcasts and stuff, because I'm deep in this world, they keep talking about the Ish story, so I reckon they're going to do that as a spin-off season to buy time for the part three to come out.
Possible.
Anyhow, clearly I hope this unannounced game is indeed part three, but James, do you have a preference one way or another?
No.
Before we lose you entirely.
Could you imagine another Last of Us hype cycle?
I hope I'll be dead by then. Or away from Ewan, maybe.
Look, I started the show talking about Capcom, so you could afford me this.
That's not how it works.
A little bit for you.
Yeah. I'm happy you're happy, I guess. We'll just leave it at that.
I mean, it's not confirmed.
No, well, I'm happy you could be happy.
Are we safe to say, like, we can rule out Jack and Daxter?
I mean, that's
I don't think they're interested in doing anything that's not, like, grim, dark, realistic, photorealistic, like, sad.
I can't see them returning to Uncharted either as well. I just can't see them getting excited about that anymore. I still want another Uncharted game, but I want it, like, another studio to handle it. As I've said before on the show,
being handed off to Ben.
Just more like Intergalactic looks cool, Ben would be perfect. And it's like it's like a different, I don't know, vibe to what they've done before. And it's obviously a lot. Just from the title, you can tell it's going to be about religion. And I just think there's going to be a lot more different things than that haven't been explored before. And I'm always more for that.
Yeah, I can't wait for the game. Looks really cool. We've got a little bit of time to wait, though, so we're going to need something to help us pass the time. Fortunately, Nintendo are coming in clutch with announcing plans that they'll be returning to Gamescom in 2025 this year after being absent last year, presumably kind of spinning up the engines for what is the Nintendo Switch 2's launch in just a couple of weeks' time, very, very soon. James, is there anything in particular hoping to see from Nintendo making the return to Gamescom this year?
Not really. I think they just need to get the Switch 2 in everyone's hands, right? Like, I feel like that is the strategy here. I would just like to know what the second half of this year looks like for them and Xbox. Like, I just, maybe a Metroid Prime date, like, I don't know, some other games. It does feel a little bit quiet games-wise. Like, I know they have new hardware and a new Mario Kart, and that will probably carry them throughout the whole year, but I don't know. Normally, they have, like, a pretty good cadence of releases, so I'm expecting to see maybe some more announcements there.
Yeah, I think we definitely do need more to look forward to beyond, like, Donkey Kong. Metroid Prime, obviously, being one of them, but... and Pokemon, but even too, then, I guess, like, later in the year.
There's so many games, like, that are this Kirby. Year that aren't dated. Yeah, if that's your
Kirby.
Thing.
Yeah, okay.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah, we'll see.
Yeah. Maybe it is going to be difficult for them to have.
I don't really know enough about already. Nintendo or Gamescom historically to comment on it.
I feel like there'll be a big...
Because that's normally August, right?
So, yeah, maybe September-ish.
Yeah, okay.
I think it's... The dates are in the article. I feel like it's late August, like 24th to the 26th or something like that, or the 29th.
Yeah, I mean, like, to me, that's like the dust has settled after Mario Kart and Donkey Kong, the hardware, everyone's kind of used it and stuff. So that's when they could really... Maybe if they just... I mean, who knows? Maybe there's a direct... Because I don't think there's a direct announced for Summer Game Fest time, like that time. So maybe do one a little bit later and then be like, and all this shit's on the floor at Gamescom. Like, maybe something like that, some kind of... execution to line up there, but
yeah. It could also spin up a bit more hype for like Dust Bloods or something like that. Like if that's potentially early the next year, like they could like announce betas and stuff like that. But I think there'll probably be more so like a big influx of like more third party stuff because it's obviously going to be a big focus for them to obviously get all these third parties in.
Resident Evil. Xbox
might announce all their shit coming to Switch too. Like that'd be big for them, I suppose. Game Pass possibly. You know, that'd be wild. But yeah, I think that'll probably be more so the focus will be third-party stuff, I think.
Yeah, I forgot all about Dusk Bloods, and you reminded me just then, got me all excited again.
It exists.
Yes. Yeah. I was, I thought it... Oh, no, don't worry.
I think your point's very much right, though, James. Like, it'll be a matter of just getting into people's hands. Like, I don't know what the situation is like in Europe. Obviously, Japan and America, the demand still seems strong despite the kind of high cost. But maybe Europe's kind of got a similar situation to us as well, and that people are a little bit skeptical of the price. So getting it in people's hands, I'm sure, is going to work in its favor. And yeah, Brody, I think for sure, like a big feature now has to be like the third party releases coming out to it. Maybe even Hollow Knight Silk Song, like somewhere kind of announced and lead up and allegedly still talked about in terms of this year, right?
It was in the sizzle reel.
Yeah. And if it's going to be playable in Melbourne at a museum exhibit in September, maybe
makes you wonder,
they have it in other places first.
That?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of wild. That game remains a mystery to me. All right, I have a rapid fire question for both of you. PlayStation today announced that PlayStation Stars, their loyalty program, first introduced in 2022, only 3 years ago, is coming to an end. James, will you miss it?
I don't think I ever signed up.
Stars
are not shining for me, put it that way.
You reading from Brody's book.
Literally.
I did sign up and like claimed points and stuff. I might have used it for a discount once or twice.
Was it good? I've heard it was alright.
It was alright. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, it
and
was
that's
not
like
hard
maybe why they
get
shut it down.
Loyalty points.
People were too loyal.
I mean, I got like a trivial discount. But I must admit, like, in order to get up the levels, you had to like purchase like 4 games in that level to go up. And that did make me I'd look at my level and see it as a couple of games shy, and it's like, well, what's in the sale at the moment that I can buy?
Surely they're intending to revamp it or replace it with something. Otherwise, like, if you're a PlayStation player, you'd be like, well, hang on. Like, why?
Yeah, it doesn't really matter, though. They don't need to, like, work on loyalty, right? Like, they are the market leader.
Yeah.
I know Xbox has a pretty good, like, I mean, it's not amazing, but, like, I feel like it's money for nothing, pretty much. And Nintendo the same. Like every now and then I'd buy something and be like, yeah. Oh yeah, I've got like $10 in my account for doing nothing.
I think it's a nice thing to have, but I don't think many people are going to miss it, and I don't think PlayStation need it really.
No, they but don't. Yeah. And I think like as they become more and more like market leading, they are going to all stuff like this is going to disappear. Sorry, this is a rapid fire.
That's why competition's good. Brody, was that a yes or a no then? Missing PlayStation stars?
No.
No. Okay. Figured as much. Let's play What the Wiki then, the Press Start podcast game show where the previous week's winner reads part of a Wikipedia page for an unknown game and we, the contestants, must guess the game. A point is awarded for each correct guess with a round ending after someone's bagged themselves 2 points. Brody, you were last week's winner, so we'll be in the hosting chair today, but James, I think you have an update for us around the scoring for What the Wiki.
Live. Big update. Yeah, absolutely. Went back and listened.
Did I get it wrong?
I don't know if you did or not, but this is the final ranking, going back and listening to each one. Ewan is at first on 16 points.
Yeah.
Brody is second on 14 points.
14?
Oh.
Yes.
I'd overstated a point.
Wow. James, that's me, is on 11 points.
Uh-huh.
Shannon on 7.
Yep.
And Harry, in his only appearance, got a clean sweep. Not his only appearance, that's a lie.
I dropped Harry off.
Yeah, so Harry's got 3 points.
I'm wondering where this missing point of mine has gone. I think I'm
going to
watch
that. Are you sure?
What am I sure?
You wouldn't have missed that. Because, yeah, Brody got 2 points last week.
We don't need to delve into this.
Maybe. Now. Yeah.
I'll hire some people. I'm going to launch my investigation.
I'll readjust. What's the word? I don't know. I'll reassess. I'll do it. I was under, like, timely duress from the rest of the team. I had to be here, so.
Either way, the scores are still TBD for the moment, but.
So, first is Ewan, Brody second, James is third.
Yeah, that's all we need to know.
That worked out very well for me. I'm very happy with that, James.
I'm, like,
thank
shocked.
You for that.
Like, who would have ever pinned Ewan being on top?
I know, it's been an unusually good season for me.
Ewan's always on top, I hear.
Could all change. Right. We're only 5 months into the year.
Anyway, let us move on. Game number one. Oh, shit, I might read them in the other screen.
I was also away for like 5 weeks so far this week, so that's probably why. I'm just going to say that, but that's okay.
That sounds like a cop-out to me. I'm going with it. All right. This should be relatively quick, I would think. Ooh. Where to start? Set in a retro-futuristic sci-fi world inhabited by coexisting humans and humanoid aliens, the game revolved around battles between teams on competing mercenaries. The game received mixed reviews from critics. Developed over 8 years, the game experienced unprecedentedly low sales for a project of its size, and was shut down 2 weeks after its launch.
Oh, Ewan.
Aww.
Ewan.
It's Concord.
It is Concord. You didn't even ask it as though it was a question then. You were so confident. So yeah. Resolute. Okay.
Could only really be one game.
1 point to Yui. All right. Game number two. This game is played from a first-person perspective with no combat. Its themes include bullying, the impacts of social media, and suicide. They are the primary themes of the game.
Ewan. Oh.
James.
Is it Silent Hill, The Short Message?
It is Silent Hill, The Short Message.
Ah, I was there. James, just quicker.
Okay.
Eat shit, Ewan.
A point apiece. This is the crowning point. All right. Okay. The game is an action-adventure game set in an open world based in blank. Players control blank, which features the total of 8 playable characters, including the 4 initial members, as well as post-launch additions. While it can be played solo, the game features a 4-player cooperative multiplayer mode. When played solo, players can switch between characters at will, while the other characters are controlled by the AI. Each character has access to 3 weapon classes, with each class being shared by multiple characters. Each character has a unique melee combat style and traversal method.
James. Is this Suicide Squad Kill the Justice League?
It is Suicide Squad Kill the Justice League. Those were among three of the worst reviewed games last year, according to.
They added four more characters to that.
Yeah, apparently so. Wow, Mr. Freeze is one of them.
That's what was throwing me off.
No, Mrs. Freeze isn't. There's a Mrs. Freeze, I think.
Look, I didn't read it properly. You might be right.
Okay. God, I wasn't even registering Suicide Squad there. Well done.
Neither
James.
Was I. The eight people threw me off. But yeah.
Well, congratulations, James. Up to an undetermined amount of points. Well done.
No, he's up to 13 points now. So just behind you now, Brody.
Well, allegedly.
Maybe two.
I'm glad I managed to get a point out of that, though, because that's given me a healthy 3-point bump at the moment, which feels pretty good.
Allegedly.
Allegedly, yeah. It could all change, apparently. But with that, let's bring an end to what was this week's episode of the Press Start Podcast. Subscribe to us on Listener or the podcast service of your choice. Follow us at press.au and visit the site at press.com.au. We've been joined today by Brody.
Thank you. You can follow me on most things at Brody_DG.
And also joining us today, it was James.
Yeah, you can find me on X at James, @JAMZ, or elsewhere.
And I've... Just been your host, Ewan. You can follow me on socials at Ewan_Roxburgh. I'm going to be cashing in whatever loyalty points I have left on PlayStation Stars, but until next time, happy gaming.
Bye.
Bye.